Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. This hour, we're going to tap into the pulse of today's young folks. We are going to spotlight the Black women of 2019. Black women have always been subjected to patterns of discrimination that are a persistent feature of life in the United States. The historical burdens of poverty, racism, and sexism remain negative forces that significantly impact the achievement of Black females. This hour, students from Florida A&M University explore some of the issues. Joining me here in the studio, I welcome Amelia Fields. Amelia hails from Alabama. She's graduated from Florida A&M. And will be pursuing a PhD in psychology.
Greetings, everyone.
Crystal Bush, she's my homegirl. She's from Detroit, Michigan. Crystal is a first-year grad. She's in education psych.
Hello there.
And we have Brianna Jacobs, hails from Jamaica. She plans to go into clinical and counseling psychology. She's also a first-year graduate student.
Greetings, everyone.
And Camille Lewis. Camille has been around and has really been a strong supporter of 411 Teen. We're going to try to hold on to her. She graduates this semester. By the time you hear this, she will have graduated and plans to continue her PhD.
Greetings.
Well, glad to have you. Why did you all identify talking about the Black woman as a discussion topic?
So I think the Black woman comes up a lot in my daily conversation. Mm-hmm. So it's a conversation that I think the general public needs to be a part of.
Okay. And all of you agree or you do you
share? I strongly agree. Mm-hmm. And additionally, just some of the day-to-day hassles and struggles we have to face and deal with in the workplace, in school, and things like that, I think need to be addressed and spoken about as well.
Okay. All right. As young Black women at a historically Black university, what types of discrimination and issues are you all confronted with? Where are you coming from? What do you see as the issues? Because, you know, I'm old school. So what I see as an issue may not be an issue at all. I want to hear from you this hour. I want to know where you're coming from and what you're seeing. So let's start, first of all, by at least just identifying some of the issues from your perspective, the issues or the problems facing Black women in the 21st century.
I would say it's two-part, mm-hmm. at least two parts. One would be Black women defining themselves, whereas they said, I feel like the general public should be involved in these conversations. I feel like certain members of the general public should be in this conversation, specifically Black women. So the ability to define ourselves for ourselves and have that conversation, albeit publicly, within our communities, as well as, like, I would say Black women and sexuality is a big topic for me.
All right. Moving right along.
I would say for me, Black women and this internalized standard of beauty that has been projected to us and how we respond to that projection.
Okay.
For me, I would like to analyze the systems of support that Black women have.
And or lack of them.
And yet the lack of. Yes,
we're
ma'am.
We're on the same
yes.
place. Okay.
Well, something I think would be very important for us to discuss is the relationship that Black women have to strong male figures in their life, because a lot of us lack that while growing up.
Okay. Well, and I'd like to add a couple that I think we need to start with, as I may have shared with you previously. And I don't think you can talk about black women without talking about the black family. So I would like to see us start at that point, make that our commence point. And when I say black family, what are the dynamics? What are the issues that you see black women experience with the black family, within the black family?
Black women are the rock of the black family. I almost want to say that the family centers around black women, the black mother, the grandmother, mm-hmm. like this strong maternal figure I think a lot of black families have that tend to support and give everything to the family. And I also think in some ways the black woman or in the black family is underappreciated. I would just say sometimes it's underappreciated, but the black woman is central to the black family.
Okay. Comments. I would like to hear from all of you.
I would agree at the risk of sounding blasphemous. It's like a black woman is at times seen as like the sacrificial lamb. Like she'll do anything for the family at her own, sometimes even at her own expense. And yeah, without her, that family would not exist.
I agree. I was reading an article recently talking about grandmother's codes of the streets, and it talked about how in those maternal style families and how the majority of them tend to be that way in the African-American communities. These grandmothers, these mothers, sometimes at ages as early as 21 or 37, are taking on the full responsibilities of these households, rearing children that aren't theirs, helping out in communities, doing so much and so much extensive emotional work that goes without, again, a lot of times without acknowledgement or in sometimes to her own detriment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
Well, from my perspective of what the black woman has endured throughout the inception of what is called the black woman in the U.S. is something that has very significant historical significance, because in the past and up to today, many black women had to go out and take care of white children and then mm-hmm. come home and take care of their families as well. And it is a system that is very matriarchal, but also, even though it is matriarchal, it still needs support from other parts of it, not just, you know, the sole burden being on you. And having more figures, like male figures involved, would be something that would be imperative for the community. There's nothing wrong with being a strong female leader, but also it would be good to have more male influences in that dynamic as well.
Okay. As we talk about that black woman and the role that she plays in the family, one of you, and I can't remember who, identified definition of self, defining who self is. And that is a part of that family. How do they define themselves? So let's look at that as far as definition. Where does the black woman's definition come from? How does it evolve? What are the tenets or the factors that are involved in this self-definition?
So I can speak as a mother. Oftentimes when I introduce myself, and I guess it goes back and forth now that I'm more aware of it, but oftentimes the first thing I say is, I'm a mother. And then it's who does such and such and such, but I identify myself within my family as a mother. So my children are very much the center of decisions that I make and moves that I make and places that I go. It's, can I take them? Can I not take them? How are they going to situate in this? So for me as a black woman, my role within my family is very much defined by motherhood. And that has shaped just a large portion of how I interact with the world.
Okay. Others?
I would say my identity is shaped by my family. I'm very much so, like, I don't know, I would say a little more risque version of my mom. Like, from my professional pursuits to my personal experiences, I am my mother's daughter. But I would also say that a lot of who she is the exact opposite of who my grandmother was. Mm-hmm. So it could go either way. Mm-hmm. But I would say definitely I am a culmination of the women around me.
Okay.
Speaking about my family and the roles that the various women play, it's slightly different, I feel like. While I love Alabama, I feel like they're very behind in the times. And I was very often raised by my grandparents. My mother worked a lot. But both of my grandmother and my mother, and as well as all females within the family, mm-hmm. kind of taught you and socialized you in a way to know that you were going to be the future grandmother. You were going to be the future one taking over the role and all of these burdens and all these things. And there's a certain way you're supposed to act and behave and treat and be respected and things like that. But while they often held those certain roles and things as pivotal to their own identities, anytime there were other ramifications, like additional financial stress or tests that they attributed to their religion or things like that, like tests from God, there was some struggle there. And me personally, I saw that as lacking and some holes in it. Mm-hmm. So I kind of have stepped slightly away from that traditional route.
While you're thinking, you raised some good issues that I would like us to incorporate as we look at the definition of Black women. Two, religion, what role religion plays in your definition. And the other is culture, okay? Mm-hmm. And what role they play in that. But I just want you to kind of simmer on that while we take a break. You're tuned into 411 Teen. This hour, we are looking at the Black woman. I have students from Florida A&M University, all graduate students in psychology, and they're sharing their perspectives on this. We'll take a break, and we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and I am very honored to have four dynamic young Black women, all from Florida A&M. This hour, we are looking at the Black woman. We are talking about the definition of self and definition of a Black woman. And Brianna, I had to interrupt you because we went on a break, but you're in the hot seat.
Yes, I am. So my definition of a Black woman and how that pertains to as myself. So coming from a different cultural background and then, you know, integrating into American society, growing up, you know, I didn't know about terms that were referred to as discrimination, racism, and things of that nature, because growing up in a country where primarily the majority of the population is Black, you know, you hear historical contexts about slavery and things of that nature, but everyone around you looks like you. So immigrating to the United States and getting, you know, informed very rapidly about
who you are, what role you play.
Yes, and the structure of society. Mm-hmm. So what I've came to recognize is that, especially what I come from and the background that I have is, you know, you have to work hard for what you want. And in this country makes you recognize that you have to work twice as hard to get half of what they have, which is a quote that's primarily, you know, displayed to a lot of us. And that signifies to me that you have a lot of weight and pressure placed on you, because every single step you make, every move you do, it's not just about you. There's a little girl out there somewhere who's watching you, whether it's your niece, whether it's a little girl you don't even know, whether it's a friend, but there's somebody out there who's expecting you to become someone more capable and becoming the standard of what they could possibly become. So that puts a lot of pressure on me as a person, and especially the role it plays in this society. So my definition, I want to say, is someone who has to be resilient. You have to overcome adversities all the time, and you have to be tenacious. And so you have to remember that you have to address the things that are, you know, how they affect you, whether it's mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, because that does play an impact on how you move around in the world. Because although you have to be this strong person, you have to still take care of yourself, because you can't help others unless you first take care of yourself. So, yes. Okay.
Amelia, you brought up a couple of things that I'd like to have us elaborate a little bit more on. And the role of religion. What role does religion play in your self-identification? And that's to all of you. It may not play any role. What, if any role? Let me make it clear. If any role does religion or spirituality play? Okay.
Spirituality plays a lot, plays a large role in my definition of a woman, or even, you know, and I think you mentioned culture, because spirituality and culture is kind of tied into one. So, you know, I believe, and Bree kind of touched on this, that Black women have this power and this resilience and this, like Black women are amazing. Like, you want something accomplished, give it to a Black woman and she will do something with it. Like, there's just this like spiritual nature of Black women that resonates whenever we touch anything or come into contact with anybody. Like, it's a power that can't be denied. And I feel like that power is connected to a spiritual power. Like, we have a essence about us. Like, we're connected to the spiritual realm in a way that, you know, other people may not be connected, and we're able to channel that energy and channel that power into what we do. Like, that spirit gives me the power to be the woman that I am. It propels me, and it makes me who I am. It's very much tied into my self-image and how I view culture and how I view myself. It's very tied into.
Okay. Whoever wants to go next.
I agree 100% with what Camille just said. That is, has been and been the practice of my, I'll call it the reawakening of my femininity. Because due to, again, how, where I came from and how femininity and being a Black woman was defined, there was a lot that I found was lacking in the sense that, a lot of the mechanisms of religion, especially of Southern Baptist religion, pigeonholes women and Black women into this role of laborer, of silent helpmate, of just like ambiguous, strong figure. They give her a lot of strength. She can do so much, like the same amount of resilience how you just spoke about, except that she's... the power is taken away from her in a way to which that she has no actual control over those modes and where they are fully realized in. And as far as just, I'm trying to tiptoe around the subject. As far as religion and being Baptist, that actual role that they portray females to play is detrimental to our growth and who we are as individuals, is what I feel.
Yeah, I would kind of piggyback off that and say that for me, religion, for most people, the structure and like organization of religion really is pacifying to me. It doesn't serve me well. It's not who I am. But I was raised Black Baptist in a church in Detroit, on the east side of Detroit. And some things from that place I have taken with me and I do take with me, but a lot of things I left right there on the east side of Detroit. I would say that to this day, I do believe in God. And I think that a belief in God or spirit or creator or universe or whatever you want to call it, serves as a way to give people hope. A lot of it for me is just like a feeling, and sometimes you need to feel positive, but it doesn't serve much of a purpose to me outside of that, like, one feel good thing that I may need in that moment.
Okay.
So from my perspective with religion and spirituality, as I make reflections back to growing up, I went to a lot of churches because I moved around a lot as a kid. So I never really stuck to one place to have a deep connection and influence. I did always believe that, as she said, you know, there is a higher power, there is a God. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that I never had that influence where something stuck to me. So one of the things that I did recognize with Eva, with the stories and things of that nature that I learned, is a lot of the, I guess, stigmas that's placed on women in general. And it was something that I had to use, you know, when learning these things, and I had to learn to decipher, you know, what does it mean for me, and where do I want to go about it? So what spirituality does is that it's finding that inner peace within myself, you know, rediscovering who I am from within, and not necessarily looking for outside validations for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we are and who we are is solely responsible. You know, you have to look within yourself and discover that. And, you know, the morality of who you are, you know, what do you stand for? What do you believe in? And you have to practice those things, because you have to be truthful to yourself and not necessarily what the outside expression of the world is telling you. So with me going through those different churches and, you know, different systems and seeing different perspectives, I had to pull from it, you know, what do I believe in, and how am I going to go about my life path with these mm-hmm. teachings that I've gained.
Okay. And as you talk about discovering self, which is a really integral part of just one's definition. Oh, what?
I just wanted to add and respond to the comments about religion, because I feel like there's like a reawakening of the Black woman's, there's like a liberation from religion and like, in Black women. I even saw an article like, why Black women are leaving the church and returning to African spirituality. But you guys touch on like this oppressive aspect of specifically Deep South religion, but, you know, Christianity and religion and how it kind of oppresses women.
It ain't just Deep South.
But in religion, period, I feel like, you know, there's an oppressiveness to women. And, you know, a lot of these religions were imposed on us as African women, you know, at some point in history. And we adopted some things that may not be natural to us and may not be good for us. So I've just witnessed, and it could just be my circle, that there's like this slow liberation, like even Beyonce with the Orisha video, like of women throwing off these oppressive religions and accepting something or some form of understanding of who they are and their feminine energy. Like there's just, you know, like I feel like we're on this wave of like women taking their femininity back in a positive way.
Okay.
Other comments?
I feel the same, and I feel like it's becoming more normal for us to be these sensual beings that are, like, not letting our bodies and things be co-opted by
men
and the negative aspects that they've been, the lights that's been shown on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like there's this silent wave of reawakening, and I feel like these conversations and things like that help to stimulate them.
Okay. Well, in this evolution, where does one's identity of or classification of beauty standard fall? Because that's an issue. It's always an issue.
Definitely.
What is beautiful in the Black woman? Okay.
I really want to hit on that. So this was my experience, like the raw truth. When I was growing up, I got picked on for the color of my skin, you know, because I was really red. when I was little. And to the point where, you know, when you're in the sun a lot, it kind of turns your hair blonde. So that's how I was when I was a little girl. It's when I went back natural that my hair got back darker. So I used to get picked on, you know, used to call me a little, you know, dundus, which is what they call like a reference to like a mongoose, the color. When I was a little girl, and I remember when I came to the States, and it was like kind of like a flip. So what I always see is that when they would say, like, you know, when I was in Jamaica, it was, you know, I used to admire how, you know, black, how darker skinned girls were. I thought they were very beautiful. And especially, like, you know, I used to get picked on because I was fairer. But when I came here, people were talking about how dark skinned girls didn't look pretty. And I was like, this don't make no sense. And it, that's what it was for me. And I'm like, what's going on here? But and then what I came to recognize is that even in my country, when I got older, the same people that used to pick on me, they started bleaching their skin. And to me, I felt like that was very, it was very painful to see that, because it's kind of like this is what the pressures of society has put on people, and especially women, because we're aspiring to be something that we're not, that we don't look like, even down to the hair that we wear. Like, a lot of us are wearing, you know, the extensions we wear because we want to look like what's projected to us, what beauty standards are, and we're not accepting what we really look like. And even for me, like, going back natural, going through the natural process, it's kind of like it was harder for me to wear my natural hair around, you know, black people, because a lot of the scrutiny that I received from having my hair natural was from that. You know, when I came to FAMU, it kind of opened me more up to accepting myself for what I look like and what I am. But for the countless other, you know, black females out there, we have to slowly move past that and recognize that what you look like is what you are, and you have to accept that. And what I do like seeing now is even with these pageants, even the Miss Universe pageant, and when I saw the woman who won, you know, it made me cry because she did it. And it's not just about her. It's about the amount of girls out there that are going to see this. And I remember it was about 2 years ago when a woman from my country went up and she had an afro in the pageant. And somebody else came back and did it, and she made it to the top and showed us that, you know, don't stop, because you have to keep breaking those barriers.
Okay.
Shay. I would say a lot of our beauty standards for me actually does just come down to hair. And I laughed when she was talking, because I remember when I went natural so many times. First of all, I grew up for like a lot of K-12, I was in predominantly white schools. And so when I wanted my hair to do what everybody else's hair was doing. My mom is my mom, and my mom let me do that. She was not necessarily, she didn't tell me to do that, but she also didn't stop me. So I did have to go back natural. And I did it when I was in undergrad. And one day I cut my hair into like a really short bob, but it was still straight, because I was really trying to break out of that like long straight hair thing that I had for so long. And then after the bob is when I like grew out the relaxer and I cut it off, and then like 2 days later I had put a relaxer back in it, and now I got this rock star pixie cut thing going on. And I think I went natural like 3 times before I went natural. And I vividly remember, like, during those stages, how much I was like preoccupied with what I looked like, because I just, like, so much of what I thought was beautiful was tied to my hair, and I was trying to get away from that with, like, trying to get rid of the long and straight, but I didn't know what the end line was. And yeah, like, it's other factors. I know, like, the listeners can't see me, but I'm a dark-skinned black woman, and I'm also fairly small. So, like, growing up, I was a skinny, dark-skinned girl with glasses. So, like, the jokes write themselves, and a lot of people told them. so, it was a way in which that I had to discover and define beauty for me, especially being around almost all white people, that I feel is hard to
Any
do.
Any words of wisdom, though, that you may share with young black girls who are going through the same thing? Because they're still going through it. I mean, you all, we're talking to the choir right now. Mm-hmm. And indeed. I understand that. But, you know, all the issues that you have identified, you have accomplished and you are, how should I say, confident within yourself. But y'all are still the minority, okay? And you know that. I mean, you know that by being on campus.
Indeed.
All you got to do is look. All you got to do is look around there. Okay. So, as you talk about the changes that you went through and endured and strived, you know, what would you say? What kind of advice would you offer to those young black girls who are struggling, who are trying to get a feel for who they are?
I would say you're beautifully and wonderfully made. Like,
but how do you get to a point where you internalize that? You know, it's very
I don't know.
I mean, but all of you, you know, sure, we're always growing and developing, and that's but all of you are at a point where you're very self-confident. Mm-hmm. You know who you are. You know what you're about. You know where you're going. Okay, and you know that you are indeed a small minority. As I mentioned before, only because all you got to do is look around you. My question to you is, how do you get there, or what type of suggestions do you make? You tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me, again, I welcome some dynamic young sisters, all from Florida A&M University. Again, I welcome Amelia Fields, Crystal Bush, Brianna Jacobs, and Camille Lewis. Before we went on break, we were just talking about how one gets to where you all are. And I'd like to have your input, your insight about how we take others. You know, you're there. You need to take four or five with you.
So as a teacher, I taught elementary school for some years, and I taught in all black environments, and I would have students who would refuse to sit in the sun during recess because they had all these, you know, ideas about what beauty was. And what I did is I took their insecurities and their misinformation and I educated them on the power of melanin, like how it conducts energy. And I would, you know, put up images of beautiful black women and black men and the power that they hold and the greatness that they achieved. But I think the narrative needs to be flipped for yourself. Like, you have to understand that your standard of beauty came from somewhere else and someone mm-hmm. else who is not you. And even they had an agenda behind trying to project this idea of beauty onto you, and that was to put you down and raise them up because of their insecurities. Like, you'll see black or white women tanning, you'll see white women getting lip injections and butt injections and plastic surgery to look like a black woman. At the end of the day, mm-hmm. the fake locks that the white women put mm-hmm. in, the plaits that the white women put in, white women want to be black women. Black women are the epitome of beauty. There is nothing more beautiful than a black person, especially a black woman. So I think children have to be educated, and everybody should take the time to educate themselves on, why do I think the way that I think? Why do I think straight hair is pretty? Mm-hmm. Like, why mm-hmm. do I want straight hair? Why do I want to look like this? And then actively and relentlessly pursue the opposite, like pursue the knowledge of knowing yourself and loving yourself. Because, like, and I had a different experience growing up. My mother never had a perm. She's had locks since I was one. And, you know, I never had the perception that black was ugly. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I was educated that black was beautiful and everything else is deficient. And that education, you know, put me as like, I could be in any environment. Like, I'm glad to be black. Like, I used to sit in the sun to get a tan. Even now, like, I get a tan because I think the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice.
That's right.
And that needs to be projected and taught in all institutions to all black children, unapologetically.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, one thing I want to say about, you know, aspiring to the standards that Camille just listed is it's expensive.
What's expensive?
The weave.
Oh.
The, you know, even when you stay out of the sun, you become, you know, vitamin D deficient. And no, I'm so serious.
You're right.
You know, because, yeah, so that in itself is, you know, and when I go to my doctor and I get told I'm vitamin D deficient, you know, I have to take, you know, tablets for that. And that's affecting your health from my perspective. I'm not a doctor. I'm just saying that, you know, they tell us that you need vitamin D. So, you know, it would help to get in the sun, I believe. I'm not a doctor. With the whole what are tools that could be used? Music. I think music is a very powerful tool because the music that you listen to, it's whether you consciously recognize it, it's embedded into your psyche.
Mm-hmm.
Because the words, the things that you're seeing and you're reiterating, that's what you're going to aspire to be like. So if you want to, you know, tap into that part of you that want to, you know, accept those things about yourself, the music. So, you know, Bob Marley, what's some of the other sisters?
Beyonce just dropped Brown Skin Girl.
Yes, there we go. You have Beyonce.
India Irie. Couldn't listen to a lot in my mama's house aside from her gospel albums and stuff, but I remember India Irie CD and a Jaheim CD, and India Irie was it.
Yes, so you have that type of music out there. And also, for the parents, you know, buy your little girls, buy them black dolls, you know. When we were growing up, that was rare to find, but everything is on Google. Mm-hmm. And they're out there, and this is another lucrative market. You know, if people, you can go out there and support business owners, you know, who are coming up and thriving with that, because you want to give your child, you know, toys that look and represent what they are.
Add in books, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and books,
and
too.
And movies and videos.
Yes, all of those things. And to the teenagers out there, you know, follow Lupita on Instagram. She is highly favored and blessed. Yes, she is. You know, you want to see people like that on your feed. Mm-hmm. You want to aspire to that. Even, you know, I can go back to the lady that just won Miss Universe. You know, you can go look at her. You know, a lot of these women that enter into these pageants, they're very successful women. And they're on a very good goal-oriented path. And, you know, those are things that are going to be good to look up to deconstruct your mind from all of the things that you were taught before.
Yes, and to piggyback off what she said, she brought up Instagram, and when addressing the youth, I just feel like social media is a very strong platform. I did a detox recently, and it's very important that you go through your feed, who you follow, and things like that, and be careful of what images you're taking in daily into your body, into your thoughts, into your psyche. Make sure those images are positive images of black people, black leaders, black scholars, black activists, anyone who's black and doing anything positive. Yes, ma'am, you want to follow them. And number two, teenagers, I would say you need to be resilient. Number one thing that I think our youth and black people in general have is that undying drive to satisfy their needs. Don't let anyone stop you from doing what you're attempting to do. And make sure you're seeking those support groups like we talked about earlier. Because one thing for me in my experience growing up, the cohort that came before us, the generations before us, they might not have known or may have been induced from the white supremacy and other things that took over, those co-opting of professionalism and different things like that. So for me, for example, my mother put perms in my head on like clockwork every month. I had a very sensitive scalp. You could get gentle of gentle, leave it in for 20 minutes, my scalp was going to burn. It didn't matter, just due to the social times, she felt my hair needed a perm. So every event, every Easter, every month, it was happening.
How does she react to you now?
She loves my hair now. And I've made her even accept and attempt to going natural. it was definitely a struggle. But as soon as I got out the house, it was no
it
more
was perms. Over, huh?
It was no more perms for me, and I was free. And I feel like that was like the first steps of my liberation. So, just again to the youth, if you feel something inherently spiritually that feels right to you, it's in line with that blackness, that Afrocentricity, I feel like you should chase it.
I do want to make a comment on what you just said about your mom, because that's a similar situation with my household, because my sister and I, we went natural many years ago. And a couple years ago, my mother just got up one day and she was like, I'm not going to perm my hair anymore.
Look at her. Mm-hmm.
And wow. Ever since then, she started wearing her hair natural. And I remember how she would come home from work and she would tell us how her coworkers were telling her how they like how her hair looks. Now, remind you, mm-hmm. I've never saw my mom with her natural hair prior to that, because she always had a perm when I was growing up. So it was kind of like learning to know somebody new that I already knew my whole entire life. Mm. So it was really nice to see how that came out.
Meeting her free self.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But that speaks to the power that we of black women, that we have to change the environment around us versus letting the environment make us change ourselves. And I think, especially for our generation as like young adults, the impact we could have on the youth, because the future is with the children. So understanding our upbringing and then how our transformation has impacted us, like, we have that power, I would even say obligation, to impact the generation, the next generation that comes after us.
Okay. Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Definitely agree.
What about your mates, partners? how do they influence your identity?
I would say I have not been in long enough committed relationships to care deeply about their feelings about my identity.
Good.
Maybe that's why I haven't been in that long of committed relationship, because I feel like at the end of the day, and usually by the middle of the day, and sometimes at the beginning of the day, I'm going to choose me. But yeah, I would say it's not much of an influence. I've noticed that like in relationships or relationship type situations, I tend to, adopt the role kind of towards what Amelia was saying, like a helpmate. And in that role, I would lose some of me. And so I'm at a point, and I've been mm-hmm. at a point for a while, where if I feel like I'm losing some of me, I'd rather lose you. and yeah.
I say that because one of the areas that I investigated when I knew we were going to talk about black women was domestic violence. And it is the leading cause of death for young women, black women, between the ages of 15 and 25, okay? They're three times more likely to be killed by domestic violence and 13 times more likely to know their killer. What they found, a couple of the tenets they found as far as domestic violence is concerned, is that black women have a tendency to protect, mm-hmm. okay? They are the last to report domestic violence. And they tend to stay in volatile relationships, whatever it may be, psychological, physical, whatever, longer than other races. In these last few minutes, can we talk about that particular aspect and how that plays into our psyche and our self-identification?
I think historically the black woman has always been charged with the family, and being that the black man is such an important part of the family, you know, we charge ourselves with taking care and protecting the black man, even to our detriment that we spoke about earlier. And I'm hesitant to say don't do it because we need the black men, and if we don't,
not at my expense though.
I'm true. Not
I don't
not
need you in place with me.
That is true. That is true. But it's an issue. It's a complex issue that I think has a lot of historical context to it. And essentially, black women have always kind of gotten themselves together and championed for themselves and lifted themselves up and gotten through adversities. And the black men have struggled. And I think black women understand black men struggle with some things, but if you don't, are we enablers? Like, we have to let them. We have to, like, they might need to fall so they can learn how to get back up. Like, we need to leave them and handle the family because they're still our responsibility.
Other comments?
Well, I have a personal experience with domestic violence. Both two separate cases I'm going to tell you guys about. One is my current roommate. And a family member of mine. We had to have the cops called because that sense of protectionism was still there. And it's very intricate. And from, again, being, having experience from both sides of it, from as a psychologist and also as, I guess, a client, it can be very intricate. And a lot more underlying than what it seems to be. Mm-hmm. But that does not take away the weight and the trueness and the seriousness of us saying, like, you need to be responsible for yourself and you need to make sure that you get everything you need to get. I'm speaking to my black women, if any are listening, who happen to be in that situation.
We have to be okay letting them go.
You have to be okay with, you have to be okay with knowing that it's not your fault if that role isn't fulfilled. Just because we are put into this role of, you know, protecting and holding together the black family, if it's manifesting or happening in any type of negative way, that is not, that weight is not on you. And you got to let that go and let the situation go. And I experienced a lot of, again, looking at the support groups and things like that when we talk about with her specifically, even currently, she's still kind of cross with me. Isn't speaking to me. So that protectionism extends to even farther and it alienates you from any type of potential support that you could have. Because not only is it the sense of, I want to protect you, I want to keep you here, even to my own detriment, it's even, I'm willing to, since I'm stuck in the cycle of already alienating the ones who's closest to me, I'm willing to go even farther to farther alienate them, which puts me in even a further place of detriment.
So, my take on this is, well, we all have people in our lives, family members, relatives, and, you know, our siblings and stuff, and we all like and love a lot of characteristics about them, but we also, you know, there's certain things that we don't like about them, and we know that we can't change them.
True.
Do we? Do we know that?
That some characteristics are not changeable.
You can't change.
I think some of them
we
can.
We've got a few minutes, but first of all, I want to say we got to continue this because there's tons of things that we need to talk about. But my question was, do we really know that we cannot change them? That's the issue that I throw out there. But go on and continue.
So it's the thing where, you know, when you get involved with a person, you have to, you know, you need to learn, like, what I want to say is, what are you willing to tolerate? And if you know that firsthand knowledge, you know that that is something that you're not supposed to tolerate. You cannot change a person. The only person that can change a person is themselves. Mm-hmm. And we all have that understanding from living and growing up with people, even the relationships that we have with our friends. And having a significant other is not, that's not going to change it. So when we create these ideas in our minds thinking that, oh, I can potentially see this happening and wonder and think and have this expectation that they will. You can't change a person. They're going to have to go through that process of changing themselves. And if they can't, they're going to have to suffer the consequences of their actions.
Mm-hmm. But you have to be able to stand up.
Yes.
Like that.
Yes.
Any other comments?
Kind of piggybacking off Amelia, I would say,
make it quick. We got 30 seconds.
I would say I came up with something. I was part of a performing poetry organization in undergrad, and we were writing, and I think the prompt was specifically about relationships, and the poem ended up being, like, dramatic, but the ending line was, "It's not your job to save them," and I feel that. Like, it's not my job.
Well,
so.
It's my job to say we're old. The time is out, okay? But thanks. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts. That's it for this edition of 411 Team. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.